Welcome to Popcorn Talk, featuring movie discussion, news, and interviews. Popcorn Talk, we talk movies.
Hey, welcome everybody to a very, very special Scare Guy show, home edition, the place for news and insider opinions from the world of horror, fan conventions, TV shows, films, and everything that's scary, fun. And on this week's show, what an honor, we are talking with horror legend Greg Nicotero about his new series, Creepshow, based on the classic film from Stephen King and George Romero. We are so excited. This is one of the best things that's ever happened to us. But like, first of all, let me introduce the other host who we have with us this week, Cheeseman.
I'm Cheeseman in the chair, normally Cheeseman on the couch, here with thescareguy.com.
And I'm Katie, aka the final girl of the Scare Guy, and ready to talk about some creepy stuff. Excited.
Yes, and also keeping us on track, producing the show tonight, is Ryan. Ryan Nielsen in the booth. Hey, Ryan.
So excited to be here. I am a massive fan of Greg's work. We are just so honored to have you here, Greg, and I cannot wait to hear more about Creepshow.
All right. For those of you who have been living under a rock for the past 30 years, Greg Nicotero is a Hollywood legend in horror, makeup, and special effects. His career spans so many classic films and TV shows, all the way back to George Romero's Day of the Dead, Halloween 5, Stephen King's Misery, to Army of Darkness, Scream, and the TV mega hit Walking Dead. There's so much more, but the biography of this man is just so long. Anyways, together with his KNB EFX group, he has won Emmys, Oscars, and the adoration of fans the world over. He's also the executive producer of the brand new Creepshow streaming. It's a horror anthology series. It's awesome. It's streaming on Shudder, and it's going to be available May 19th on digital HD, DVD, and Blu-ray. And it has a ton of cool new behind-the-scenes special features. Greg, we are so glad to have you. Welcome to the Scare Guy Show.
Oh, thanks, guys. It's super, super exciting to be here.
We just got to ask you, I know that we want to be very sensitive to what's happening in the world right now, and just let everybody know that we don't take it lightly. And we just want to ask you, Greg, how are you doing?
I got to say, it's strange to be going 1,000 miles an hour and then stop dead in your tracks. It's I'm sure that a lot of people that are accustomed to doing a lot of things are having that same unique experience. You know, the good part about it, honestly, is I'm making up for a lot of lost time being away from my kids, because I've been in Georgia for 10 years back and forth on The Walking Dead. So I'm not sad about that part of it. But it's strange. I mean, I think all of us everyone's just curious as to wanting to know when things will get back to normal. You know, there hasn't been a Walking Dead episode that Daryl was out looking for toilet paper. I'll be really honest. I don't know how we missed that.
Yeah, I don't think it'll make an appearance now.
I don't think anyone could have predicted that would have been a reaction of people. So I'm trying to make light of a very strange time. You know, I got a text from Suzanne Romero the other day, and she was like, you know, it's strange to think about the fact that we're living in Romero times without the humor. And I thought that was a really interesting way of looking at it, because people don't know what's going on, and there's a lot of uncertainty. But the good thing is we get a little bit of time to talk about the stuff that we love and to revisit the things that we love and watch movies and watch cool TV shows. And I've had friends recommending movies and things to me that I hadn't seen before. So usually, again, like I said, when I'm going 1,000 miles an hour, to actually be able to stop and take a minute is I'm taking advantage of that, because it'll be over quick.
We are reaping the benefits of that a little bit, because we are glad you were able to take a minute with us.
Yeah.
And so let's go ahead and turn our attention a little bit to this little series this little property called Creepshow, one of the biggest things in horror. I just have to tell you, we all watched it. We all loved the series. And it's based on the 1982 movie, Stephen King, George Romero. Also, the follow-up Creepshow 2. Also, a little bitty story I got to tell you real quick. Creepshow was, when I was a young kid, I had a birthday party, and we showed Creepshow, the original Creepshow. I don't remember how old it was, but I do remember it was one of my very first girlfriends. It was the first time I snuck off and got my very first adult kiss. So I am very I'm grateful for Creepshow.
New fun fact.
Yes, so the question is, was your birthday cake a severed head with candles in the ice?
No. Oh, no, but we had a lot of cockroaches. Hey, let me ask you then, just to start off, how did you get involved with Creepshow? I know you're the executive producer. How did Creepshow come about?
Well, it's interesting because I was doing publicity for Walking Dead, and I had a flight to catch from Australia to LA. And I thought, you know, I really want to read something on the plane. I want to, like, just something to kill some time. So I was on iBooks, and I found this book called Knights of the Living Dead. And I went, what the hell is that? And it was a series of short stories written by different authors that all took place the same night as Night of the Living Dead. And I'm like, well, that's right up my alley. This is great. So I downloaded the book and I started reading, and there was one story written by a guy named Craig Engler. And I loved the story. And I got back to LA and we reached out just because I thought, I want to shoot that story as a short. I said, I don't know what I'm going to do with it, but I really loved it. And so we reached out to him, and his manager called and said, you know, that's great, but we're in the process of securing the rights to do Creepshow. And in my head, the words in my head were, wait, my Creepshow? Because I had felt a little kinship to Creepshow because I had visited the set when I was a kid, and that's where I met Tom Savini. So it felt very strange that he went, yeah, and we're looking for a creative partner. And again, I kept wait, what? So I had a deal with AMC and called the higher ups and just said, listen, I want to do this during the Walking Dead hiatus. I want to do Creepshow. And it took a little convincing because it was for their streaming service. And I don't think anybody really had kind of quite figured out how all that stuff really worked yet. And it was Shudder's first scripted streaming show, but I convinced them to let me be a part of it and to be the showrunner and sort of run the show creatively and hire the writers and hire the directors and everything. And it was probably the hardest thing I ever did because I have this tendency to want to do everything. Like, I was designing the comic book covers and the page turns and everything. But I was grateful that the fans responded and that everybody saw that I put all of my heart and soul into it. I felt like it was the least I could do for George Romero's legacy and for everything Stephen King has done. And here we are.
All right. That's fantastic. I'm so glad you guys did. Cheeseman.
Now, how big of a fan were you of Creepshow before you started this project?
I was a massive Creepshow fan. You know, having grown up in Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, I wasn't, you know, my family's not in the film industry. So I think a lot of people sort of look at my career and they're like, wow, man, you've done a ton of stuff. Like, I was supposed to be pre-med, you know, like my grandfather was a truck driver in Pittsburgh. So like, we had to kind of work our way into this world. And between Jaws, Dawn of the Dead, Creepshow, I was a massive, massive fan of George Romero's, you know.
Yeah.
There was a show on Saturday night called Chiller Theater. It was hosted by a guy named Bill Cardill. Bill played the news reporter in Night of the Living Dead. So there was all this kind of weird, interesting confluences that all sort of seemed to meet right in Pittsburgh. And so I met George Romero And he had offered me a job on Creepshow as a production assistant. Like, if you talk to any filmmaker or you look at anyone's resume, you know, they always have the troupe that they love to work with. You know, they surround themselves with people that they want to be in the trenches with. Quentin has it. Robert Rodriguez has it. Frank Darabont has it. You know, all these guys have this, you know, sort of, who do you want to be stuck on a desert island with sort of scenario. Yeah. And for me, I was fortunate enough to become friends with George. And that's where I met Tom Savini, was on the set of Creepshow. So it changed the direction of my life profoundly. So I feel like I had a big responsibility to reimagine Creepshow in the way that George would be proud of it, and in the way that fans of the original, because you know, the interesting thing about my Creepshow series is that the people that love the movie felt like they got something out of it. It wasn't like, oh, we weren't trying to change it so much or add some new weird ownership to it. You know, the original Creepshow was in my estimation way ahead of its time by using animation to bridge the stories. And the color scheme, the lighting, you know, Robert did it when we shot Sin City in 2004. I really believe that Sin City was probably the closest thing that anybody had ever come to doing something like George had done in the original Creepshow. And that was a considerable amount of time later.
Yeah, it's fantastic. It looks great. Luke, did you have another question? Or hey, Katie, do you have a question?
Yeah, my question is, like, you were talking about inspiration, but in the sense of when you're producing content of horror nature, and that's super graphic, super bloody, is there ever a moment where you think, is this too much? Or do you just take that risk and just do it anyway?
Well, you know, the advantage is horror always takes that risk. That's what makes it horror. It was, you know, the thing about my series, very much like the original movie, was that every single episode had a different theme. Some were a little gorier, some were a little funny, some were a little more outrageous. But, you know, the show isn't necessarily really hardcore gory. You know, one of the things that a lot of people responded to was that in a world where sometimes stuff can become too gratuitous for a younger audience, and trust me, a lot of my career was built on movies that were too gory for a mainstream audience. I feel like the stories that I chose and the stories that we told were a lot more accessible to a wider range of people. But that didn't necessarily mean that the viewers felt cheated, because there's always this feeling like, oh, well, if it's not hardcore, then a hardcore viewer might feel like they didn't get what they wanted out of it. But we were able to balance that line, you know, and I think we did it in a really successful way.
Yeah,
that was awesome. A lot of fun.
Yeah.
Hey, Cheeseman, you have another question?
Yeah, sure. What were some of the most challenging special effects you did on season one of Creepshow?
Boy, you know, I think probably Bob was, my daughter just came in.
Hello.
She's like the biggest horror fan that you can imagine. And she's 14. I don't know where she gets it from.
Yeah.
I think creating Bob, knowing that for the finger, we had to create a character that was believable and authentic and had some humor to him. So we did a rod, you know, we did multiple rod puppets, and actually for a lot of the wide stuff, instead of doing full CGI, we actually did stop motion animation.
Oh, wow.
So for the shots of Bob running across the floor and jumping off the countertop and running into the garage, we actually did stop motion. I really felt like I wanted to use as many sort of authentic tools as we could for the genre and for that time, particular time period. I'm trying to think other. I mean, I think season two, which we were 24 hours away from beginning production on. I think season two, we've probably gone a little overboard in terms of some of our the effects requirements for the show, but that's what we're supposed to do, right?
Hey, can I follow up on that question? You mentioned season two, so there will be a season two?
Yes, we have 6 episodes, 12 stories, the same format as season one. You know, I wrote a couple scripts. We have some stories from Joe Conrath and Joe Hill. Some of our writers from season one have returned. So we were literally, it was Friday before we were starting principal photography, and this big giant finger came in and pushed the pause button.
Yep.
Jeez.
Yeah. I think that was Friday the 13th, I think.
It was yeah. Friday the
13th. Of all things.
Yeah. All days.
Yeah. Katie.
And,
I'm sorry, Luke, go ahead.
Just to follow up with that, any chance there will be a shark in one of these episodes that you may do in a season?
Oh, if only. If only.
I can see you going overboard on that one.
I see your Jaws poster behind you, so.
Number one movie for me as well. I almost got as obsessed watching you talk about Jaws on YouTube as much as watching the show, because I'm a giant fan as well.
Well, you saw all the photos of the restoration that we did for the Academy, right?
We're going to talk to you about that in just a couple minutes.
Yeah. Hey, Katie. Yeah.
Yeah. One of my questions was, since we are talking about season two, you know, is there anything, even in season two or if it goes further, is there anyone you would particularly like want to see either cast in the show or potentially work with on the show?
Oh, well, I'm trying. There were a lot. We were in the middle of casting, and there were a few actors that we had reached out to, and then they kind of went, oh, well, you know, we're just going to stay put because there's this weird coronavirus thing. And then that 3 days later, everything shut down.
Yeah.
So it's hard to say because there's a lot of people that we had talked to and then we kind of paused. So,
yeah.
You know, I love Jason Alexander. I love Rainn Wilson. You know, there's a lot of people that I'll probably, every time I have an episode in production, I'll reach out to some people. You know, Simon Pegg is
amazing. Yes.
Yvette Nicole Brown is great. You know, there's
so
many great people that I would love to work with. You know, the stories, I love the scripts for season two. I think, you know, when we did season one, I kind of entered into it thinking I could do everything. And I made it very, very challenging for myself because I was designing the comic book covers and I kind of, anything that I could do, I was doing. And for season two, I really wanted to take a step back and enjoy the process and understand that, you know, the people around me are there to support me. So my production designer, my DP and everybody.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in a really great headspace when we were ready to shoot. And I think that's a little bit why it's a little more challenging, because now once we start to gear back up again, it's like, you know, how quickly those wheels will start turning again. But
yeah.
I love the stories that we're telling and I'm really excited about it.
I have to do a call out though, a shout out. Adrienne Barbeau, having her back was fantastic. That it was so great to see her in season one, episode one. That was so good.
She was really game for it. You know, I had met her a bunch of times because I'd worked with John Carpenter quite a bit. So their son, Cody, I know. And when we did the premiere, the season 9 premiere for, was it season 10? God, I can't. We did the premiere for Walking Dead, and I invited Adrienne to the premiere. It was
nice.
The season 9 premiere. And I, you know, she had kind of said to me, listen, if there's anything you have for me, I would love to do it. And ironically, we had actually a slightly smaller, we had another role in mind for her. And we ended up swapping scripts out kind of at the last minute on Grey Matter. And I wanted her for the lead for that. and she was so excited about it. I mean, we shot all of her stuff in one day. We did 12 pages.
Wow.
At one point, she's like, do you guys shoot this fast all the time? Well, we got 3.5 days to do each segment. So this is
that's amazing.
Yeah, it was a little mind blowing. And at one point it was kind of funny because we had a lightning strike. So when you're filming, if there's lightning within 6 miles of where you're shooting, everybody has to stop and you have to turn the generators off and you gotta wait for the lightning to pass. So we're all sitting in the set, kind of looking at each other, and I look over and Adrian Barbeau sitting there, and I said, you know, if somebody would have told me when I was 14 years old watching Escape from New York in the Fog that I would be hanging out with Adrian Barbeau on a movie set waiting for lightning to pass so that we can continue filming, I said, I would never believe it in a million years.
That's fantastic. Awesome. Hey, Greg, can I ask you a question? Can you see us? Can you see the screen? Okay.
I can see everybody's background.
All right, fantastic.
I saw the Eugene thing and Katie's. I saw Luke's background with the Jaws poster. I can see all your Walking Dead. I see
Godzilla, all right.
Funko.
Awesome. Well, Luke has a couple of photos he wants to show you, just to kind of talk about real quick. All right. And Ryan, if you can hold those up for us, that would be great. And
You did some recreations of a scene from Jaws with three of the characters. We actually saw it at the Hero Complex Gallery. You premiered it like at Jaws Fest, right?
Yes.
We just wanted to kind of mention that. Can you tell us a little bit about that and what inspired it?
Well, you know, the fun thing about doing special effects makeup is you can build all the toys you wanted when you were a kid. So the only thing that I felt I would never ever get a chance to do would be to recreate the shark. So I thought, well, you know, I'll recreate pieces of it. So we did this full-size Bruce head for the original Jaws Fest. And then when they did another one, I wanted to recreate that scene. I just thought, oh, it'd be really kind of cool, like sort of do this museum quality recreation of Hooper and Brody and Quint on the back of the orca.
Yeah, and it was so realistic too.
It, you know, I had, we had a life cast of Richard Dreyfuss, and we had a life cast of Roy Scheider and Nick Mara, who's a really talented sculptor, does a lot of great stuff, and he sculpted the heads, and then we molded them and punched all the hair in and body cast guys in the shop to make the bodies and the hands and everything. So
where can you see it now?
What's that?
Where can you see it now?
Actually, there's a microbrewery that's supposed to open in the San Fernando Valley that it's going to be on display along with some of our other props and things.
Oh, fantastic.
So it'll be available. It was at the Catalina Museum. That was in a Jaws exhibit in 2018. And I think I talked to Mopop up in Seattle to see if they ever wanted to display it. It's just a cool piece that, you know, people need to see it, you know.
Now, can you quickly tell us about the restoration of the fourth Bruce that you got from the junkyard?
Yes. Well, the funny thing about that was that, so you got to flash back in time to 1975. Jaws comes out. Universal has this huge backlot tour. And all of a sudden, the way I imagine it is they start scrambling. Like, we got to have something from Jaws in the backlot because we have like the biggest movie in the world and we don't have anything to show for it. So they pulled the original molds out. I don't know why, I have this vision of like a bunch of guys smoking cigarettes, like painting fiberglass of the shark, and they hung it by the tail and it was on display. So when you would go to the back lot at Universal, you could see a replica of the shark from Jaws. And they painted it green with like this weird like house paint texture or something, but it didn't.
And you saw it as a kid, right?
What's that?
And you saw it as a kid?
I saw it when I saw it in 1976. So I was 13 when I went to Universal with my uncle and my cousins. So after a while, I think in the early 90s, they took the shark and they wanted to upgrade it because they didn't think it looked real enough. So it went to a junkyard in Sylmar called You Pick Part. And people that were big Jaws fans would drive by the junkyard and you'd see it hanging there. And I think I went by there once and asked the owner like how much he wanted for it. Like I wanted to buy it. It's the only remaining cast from the original molds from Jaws. Like how much? And the guy's like, it's not for sale, you know, and kept blowing me off. And then finally about 3 years ago, the junkyard closed. They donated it to the Motion Picture Academy Museum. And that's where I entered the picture. I had reached out to the museum and said, listen, I'm happy to donate all of the labor that it would take to restore the shark as a donation to the museum if you would let us restore it. So they brought the shark to the shop January of 2019, and we spent 6 months, stripped everything off of it, all the layers of paint. We had to cut the inside of the mouth open to get inside, to rebuild the inner structure. We had to redo the gills, and then I sculpted the interior of the mouth, got castings from Roy Arbogast and Joe Elves of all the original teeth. So we rebuilt the inside of the mouth.
Wow.
And we repainted it, and it's stunning.
Looks amazing.
Stunning. It does, yeah.
In person, you can't even imagine how breathtaking it is. And to think that some guys took that job and said, okay, well, we're going to build a 20-foot shark and we're going to put it in the water and it's the size of a bus, but we're going to figure out how to move. Like, I feel like the restoration of that shark is my thank you to every single special effects technician from the 1920s until now, because they never said no. They just said, we're going to figure out how to do it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Really, when the museum opens, hopefully they stick to the December opening, because mm-hmm. I can't wait for people to see it, because it completely puts special effects technicians in a new light in terms of looking at it going, how the heck do you even start? Like, what's day one of that job? You get hired on Jaws. What is day one? Like, how do you sit down with a bunch of guys and go, okay, we're going to build the shark and this is what it has to do. And they did it, and it's a magnificent triumph for all of those guys. And so I'm honored that I had a chance to restore the shark for future generations.
Oh, James, that's so great. So, and Katie, I know that you have a specific question about Halloween Horror Nights as well. Yeah.
Yeah. So, Greg, obviously, you know, with Walking Dead and also Creepshow and Horror Nights, those are both very popular properties that can go to Horror Nights. So and the show gave me like that whole Horror Nights vibe, but visually, like the lighting, the sound, so it made me want it to be Halloween. We all love Halloween, and at the Scare Guy we talk about Horror Nights all the time. So what the first question is, have you been through the mazes for your shows?
Yes. I'm a huge Horror Nights fan. I mean, I was going to Halloween Horror Nights, you know, when it first started, and I would go to the ones in Orlando.
Yeah.
Yep.
Because we were doing Walking Dead mazes back and forth. So I consulted a lot with them. So when it came time to do Creepshow Maze, I was thrilled beyond words that Creepshow was going to be a maze. And not only that, we could use some of the original stories plus some of the new stories. So again, I think that it has the perfect aesthetic for Halloween Horror Nights, because like you said, you can draw a giant big comic book and then you can walk through the comic book panels and you're in the story. So I was really, really proud of it. And, you know, I'm excited about the fact that I think that we're gonna do it in Orlando this year, maybe. But you know, Halloween Horror Nights is an amazing institution. I think John Murdy, that does all the stuff in Los Angeles, you know, the Alien versus Predator maze. I remember walking around the corner and seeing the full-size Queen Alien.
Oh, yeah.
And, like, my mouth dropped. I was, you know, there's something so unique about horror fans in general. It's like, it's not just enough that you can go see the movie. But horror fans will, they'll go to Martha's Vineyard where they shot Jaws. They'll go to the Monroeville Mall where they shot Dawn of the Dead. Like, there's such a level of dedication that horror fans exhibit that is above and beyond any other genre. It's above Westerns, it's above musicals, it's above everything else. So part of the fun with Horror Nights is you get to walk in and stand in the same room where Michael Myers was.
Yeah.
Or where Frankenstein and meets the Wolfman fought or whatever. So I think it's a really unique experience that horror fans are built for, which is to be able to step in the same footsteps of this famous monster or this famous character or creature, and do it in a fun way. And it's just a great, it's a great thing.
What's your second, you have one more question, Katie? About
yeah, I mean, you kind of touched on it a little bit with your answer, but like, so when you are creating your horror shows and properties, do you think, this would be a good scene for a Horror Nights maze? And do you think about that at all when you're producing and creating it?
Sometimes, you know, I think it's sometimes it's also the other way around. Like, I'll have a call with the executives at Universal and they will read the scripts and they'll go through everything. But then I'll be like, wait a minute, but there's an opportunity here for this. There's an opportunity here for this. So it's a really unique collaboration. But in terms of like season two of Creepshow, I can already see which episodes would allow for a particularly fun boo scare at a man.
Nice.
Nice.
Nice. Awesome. So I've got a question for you, Greg. And first, Ryan, are we able to show the pictures? And if you can... Okay, so Luke has one particular picture, I think, that he wanted to show to Ryan, which would probably be picture number 5, I think.
All right, hold on.
Okay.
Yeah. Oh.
And this was before we knew, like, who it was. I predicted, and I went to conventions dressed as Abraham with the bat on my head, and I ended up being on, like, Sci-Fi Channel on Comic-Con and everything, but I was at conventions, but I'd run into, like, multiple special effects people, and they're like, oh, I know Greg personally, and they said they, like, sent this picture to you personally, but I'm not sure if you actually did see it, but
I did this was see my it. Prediction. I remember my... this photo.
That's cool.
It's awesome. Right, it's great. Okay. Listen, I mean, that it's so, that whole episode and... Yeah. So much of what went into making that, and the sheer split that episode had with fans and with people, and fans of the comic book that were excited to get to that moment, and people that, you know, I mean, me, one of them being so sad to see Steven and Michael go. You know, the cosplayers and the fans of the show. You know, I think I saw more people dressed as Abraham and more people dressed as Glenn with an eyeball hanging out.
Yeah.
Than I would have ever expected.
So Greg, we are kind of bumping at close. We're almost done here, but we just have a couple more questions, but one of them, this being the 40th anniversary of Friday the 13th and you and Tom Savini go back so far. Do you get from that original Friday the 13th way back then, do you have any of the makeup effects or anything that you could talk about that you just thought were just stand out in the time?
Well, I took my high school girlfriend to see Friday the 13th in the theater. And that was before I knew Tom. I mean, I was just a fan because I didn't meet Tom until Creepshow. But Tom was sort of the guy that did Dawn of the Dead and the guy that... So I knew who he was. You know, in Pittsburgh, because Tom was from Pittsburgh and I was from Pittsburgh, when Dawn of the Dead came out, there was a lot of like news, like PBS did a half hour special just on Tom. There was a lot of stuff about him on the local TV. So I knew who he was. And so with Friday the 13th, I took this girl, I'm like, oh my God, this guy that did the special effects is one of the best guys in the world. And I wasn't ready for it. She definitely wasn't ready for it. But I remember learning and understanding even more about Tom and the way that he would develop certain gags by using magic tricks, like sleight of hand, you know, like the one scene where the girl gets hit in the head with the axe, and you see the axe raise up and the axe hits the light fixture and knocks the light fixture around. And I was like, oh, well, I realized that the reason that that was done was so that you could see that it was a real axe and that the real axe had weight to it, and it hit the light fixture. And then, of course, the actual impact on the fake head, there was these great pictures in Fangoria of the fake head that Tom had made, but it didn't end up in the movie. You just see the aftermath of the girl with the axe stuck in her face. But, you know, I think that was one of the first times when I started realizing that special effects were almost a co-star in the movie, along with the actor. Mm-hmm.
Right.
And that really, that was one of the moments when you started realizing that between Friday the 13th and then all the other films that started to come out afterwards, that the guy that did the special effects was as famous as the other stars, if not
absolutely. Hey, Katie, do you have a final question for Greg?
I had a totally random question, and it was, a lot of people watch TV or movies while eating. Like when they're eating dinner, they sit down and eat and watch a show, which is what I always do. Do you ever take that into consideration when your shows are being made? Do you ever think, ooh, this might, don't eat while you're watching this? Or does that phase you? Or do you even think about it? Or is it just not something that crossed your mind?
You know, I don't think about it, because it's funny. I have a different perspective on things, because I guess because I know it's not real.
Yeah.
So in my head, obviously, I look at it, even when we were shooting the stuff, going back to that episode of The Walking Dead with Glenn and Abraham, you know, we very specifically shot all of the characters' reactions up to a specific point. And then when we did the makeups on Steven, it was sort of like I was in kind of like, okay, I need this shot with this makeup, and then I need this shot with the head. And so it became very clinical for me. I don't react to things the same way that the viewers do, because I break it down very differently. But with that being said, I certainly can understand why people would get upset or be affected by gore.
Yeah.
It's the doctor in you.
Instances when I had seen something, there, you know, in Lucha Pulci Zombie, when the girl gets the splinter in the eye, if you haven't seen that gag in a long time, watch it again. It's one of the most brilliantly executed special effects makeup gags ever. And it's so horrific. And I remember seeing it and just like...
Hey, Luke, do you have a final question for Greg?
Yeah, my final question is, if you could like work on any dream property you have not done yet, what would that be?
Ooh.
Is that going back in time or just forward in time?
Anywhere. Yeah,
anywhere.
We play this game sometimes where it's like, if you could go back in time and work on any movie, what would it be?
Or like recreate a series like you did Creepshow kind of for a property.
Yeah, you know, I love John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness.
And yeah,
it was on again the other night, actually, and I started watching it. It's such a really unique idea that I keep playing around with the idea of wanting to do that. You know, I just read recently a draft of The Day of the Triffids, which is a movie that I really liked quite a bit when I was younger, and I thought that the script was an interesting take on it. But you know, I always sort of gravitate to that kind of material that sort of, it's got this weird apocalyptic resonance to it, and what people do to survive, which is kind of what we're doing now. So
yeah. So Greg, awesome. We will definitely be tuning in for season two of Creepshow. But last question, we would be criminal if we did not ask. Do you have any kind of preview for next year's Walking Dead?
I don't. I mean, we hadn't even started pre-production yet. You know, the finale, episode 16, is going to air later in the year, which is an episode that I directed. That was written by Corey Reed. It's a fantastic episode. So I think there's a lot of great stuff to come for The Walking Dead, the world of The Walking Dead. And that's all really I can say.
Oh, no worries, no worries.
Thank you. And, thank you for asking, and thanks for everything. You know, I mean, I'm excited for people that haven't seen Creepshow to get a chance to check it out on May 19th. And
yes, Greg, thank you so much for coming on the Scare Guys show. This has been such an honor. And everyone, please, please, please make sure you pick up a copy of Creepshow. Comes out May 19th, on digital HD, DVD, Blu-ray on May 19th. Also streaming on Shudder. Also, everyone, thank you for watching. We really appreciate it. You can check us out on iTunes, YouTube, wherever you listen. Follow us on Instagram, Twitter, Facebook. All right, Cheeseman and Katie. Katie, where can we find you online?
I'm Katie. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at KT_Christine. Also active on the Scare Guy Twitter and Instagram, but also a host here at AfterBuzz, and I do the Batwoman and Riverdale after shows that you can check out.
Awesome. Cheeseman.
And I'm Cheeseman. Well, usually Cheeseman on the couch, Cheeseman on the chair. But you can find me on Twitter at CheeseOnCouch and on thescareguy.com. And I just want to say, Greg, it's such an honor to virtually meet you. This is such an honor. Big fan of yours.
Thank you, guys.
Absolutely. Greg, where can people find you?
I am at G Nicotero on Instagram. I'm not on Facebook or Twitter or any of that other stuff. So Instagram is the only place you can find me.
All right. And you can find me at Jim Fry LA. Everybody, thank you so much for tuning in this week. We will be back for more shows later in the season. Bye-bye. Thank you so much, Greg.
From producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, and the entire Popcorn Talk Network, we would like to thank you for tuning in. For questions or comments, be sure to visit popcorntalk.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of the Popcorn Talk Network.